Tulsi Maharani Ki
Jai.
Samaveda Bhaktivinoda Ki
Jai.
Gaur Premanandi
Hari Bo.
All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pacharani Nirvisesa Sunyavali Paskachade Satarani Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Samsajivam Sadvaitam Sadvaditam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Panam Sagana Bhavita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
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 So it's October 2nd, 2009 in Munich in the morning, and we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 12, Dhruva Maharaj Goes Back to Godhead, Text 47. Mahatvam ichatam tirtam shrotu shiladayo gunaha yatra teja sadichunam mano yatra manasvinam mahatam ichatam tirtam Shrotu shiladayo gunaha yatra teja sadichunam mano yatra manashvinam Mahatvam.
Mahatvam.
Greatness.
Greatness.
Ichatam.
Ichatam.
For those desiring.
Tirtam.
Tirtam.
The process.
Shrotuhu.
Of the hearer.
Shila adhyaya. High character, etc. Gunaha, qualities, yatra, in which, tejaha, prowess, tat, that, ichunam, for those who desire, manaha, adoration, yatra, in which, manasvinam, for thoughtful men. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Anyone who hears this narration of Dhruva Maharaja acquires exalted qualities like him. For anyone who desires greatness, prowess, or influence, here is the process by which to acquire them. And for thoughtful men who want adoration, here is the proper means. Purport. In the material world, everyone is after profit, respectability, and reputation. Everyone wants the supreme exalted position, and everyone wants to hear about the great qualities of exalted persons. All ambitions which are desirable for great persons can be fulfilled simply by reading and understanding the narration of Dhruva Maharaja's activities. Mahatvam ichatam tirtam shrotuhu shila dayo gunaha yatra teja sadichunam mano yatra manashvinam. Anyone who hears this narration of Dhruva Maharaja acquires exalted qualities like him. For anyone who desires greatness, prowess, or influence, here is the process by which to acquire them. And for thoughtful men who want adoration, here is the proper means. So what is the third verse of the Shikshastika? Can you tell me? Amanena manadena. Right? Amanena manadena. So one, and here we have the word mana, adoration, respect. So generally we are saying that we should not care about whether or not we get some high position and some honor and some greatness in society, but rather we should give that to everybody else. Right? And this verse, according to Bhaktivinoda, can you not have your back to the deities? I know it's very difficult with the Vyasa-san over here, but if you can somehow... Yes. sit maybe to the side or something. Yeah, maybe the Vyasa-san should be over there so people don't have to have their back to the deities in order to see the speaker. Anyway, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that this verse of the Shikshastika is the gateway between unsteady bhakti and steady bhakti. And the situation of unsteady bhakti is not a very satisfying situation. The Bhagavatam says that there are only two kinds of people in the world who are happy. What are the two kinds of people in the world who are happy? No? Someone who's a pure devotee of Krishna, a transcendental, or another transcendentalist, someone who's worshipping Paramatma or Bhagavan also. And what other kind of person in this world is happy? The transcendentalist and the
crazy
person. The fool. The fool. And everyone in between is suffering. Because human form of life means that I am conscious that I'm suffering. An animal's not aware that they're suffering. Most animals are living outside. Some animals, of course, have an underground home or a cave, but most animals are living out in the elements. Like right now it's raining and it's cold, and the animals are out in the rain and the cold. So that is certainly suffering, right? But they're not thinking, I'm suffering. They're not thinking, I'm suffering. They're not asking, why am I out here in the rain and the cold? Why am I in a suffering condition? And foolish people who are like animals also don't ask that question. They just think, yeah, you know, I'm getting my food, I'm getting my beer, I'm watching my football games, and I'm happy. And then the transcendentalist is actually happy. Everybody in between is suffering. Now, we were talking last night about the steps of learning. Remember, the first step is unconscious incompetence. In other words, you're suffering and you don't know you're suffering. Then conscious incompetence, you're aware, you become aware that you are suffering. So those of us who take up Krishna consciousness, one of the first things that happens is we become aware that this material world is a miserable place, right? And then we take vows that we're going to give up all of the ways in which materialistic person try to cover their miserable condition, especially intoxication. So people are very interested in intoxication because that way they can again become foolish. They can again become like an animal and unaware that they're suffering. And nowadays we have not only chemical intoxication, we also have electronic intoxication. So people can be, and you see, you know, when you travel like through an airport, you see that people have a hard time being even for one moment without their some kind of intoxication. They're watching the television, they're listening to their music, they're drinking alcohol. Practically all of the time, they're trying to remain in an unconscious position. They don't want conscious incompetence. They want to be unconscious incompetent. But when we take up Krishna consciousness, we become aware that we're suffering, and we may not yet be on the platform of experiencing transcendental bliss 24 hours a day. So we may not yet be fully transcendentalists, and yet we are no longer fools. Therefore, we are experiencing the sufferings of material nature very acutely in the unsteady stage of devotional service. In the steady stage of devotional service, that is compared to Brahma-bhuta. Brahma-bhuta prasanatma naso chitina kanchati sama sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. Once one's bhakti becomes steady, then one is always in a joyful state. Why? Not because the material miseries have vanished, and not because one is unconscious, but because one has realized, I am the soul. And the soul is always joyful. One becomes super conscious. When you become super conscious, and then you're in a state of joy. Savai pun samparo dharmo yato bhaktir anhoksaje ahoituki apritita yad atma supersedeti. One becomes fully joyful. So it seems reasonable that one should want to get through this stage of unsteady bhakti as quickly as possible, right? Because this stage where you're no longer a fool and you're not yet fully a transcendentalist is a stage of pain. It's a stage of difficulty. Prabhupada says that until one becomes steady, that Krishna consciousness is a hard struggle with determination. We were mentioning that, I believe, yesterday. I think it was Doyle Goranga was saying how in order to overcome material miseries by going into a mechanical trance, it takes a lot of mental strength. Remember we were saying that? So hard struggle with determination. So we want to get to the stage of nishta, where things start to become automatic, where we naturally, we start to become at the stage of unconscious competence, where we're naturally absorbed in Krishna and we're in a state of joy. That is what we're aspiring to, right? Are we all aspiring for that? Yes? After nishta, things come one after another very quickly. So what is this doorway between unsteady bhakti? Oh, thank you, whoever did that. Thank you very much, the gods of amplification. So, what is the doorway between unsteady bhakti and steady bhakti? How does one cross this threshold where one is struggling, having this hard struggle with determination, no longer having material illusion, and yet not having transcendental realization? Of course, one gets glimpses of transcendental realization, but in a steady state. That's one of the questions everybody asks. I get these glimpses, but how do I get it all the time? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that this third verse of the Shikshastika is the doorway. What was that again? Tell me the verse again. Amanena manadena. For myself, I'm not looking for honor. We talked yesterday about appreciation. Appreciation is different from honor. The gods can just calm down a little bit. That's too much amplification. So I was also thinking, and we'll talk about that again tonight, that appreciation is different from praise. The Shastra says, don't praise, don't criticize. Appreciation is a different creature. So honor is not that word I'm stuck with. It has to be like that. All right, well, we'll just move it a little. That'll help. All right. Well, we still have that kind of zzzz sound. You need it there. Okay, but there's a buzz. We're going to get rid of the buzz. Can we get rid of the buzz? Okay, it's definitely not a satfagun sound. Since this temple seems to be very interested in having everything satfagun. And just thank you for the heater, but it's a little hot. Okay. So we're give up wanting to have any position of honor. And Prabhupada talks about here, profit, respectability, reputation. You know, Prabhupada talk about profit, adoration, distinction. Right? So we're supposed to give up this profit, adoration, distinction, which are often called subtle sex life. Right? And until and unless one gives up the desire for these things, one does not pass through the door of humility and one cannot enter into steady bhakti. One will remain on an unsteady platform. As long as we think, I want to be very great, I want people. Let's look at the three things, profit, adoration, and distinction. And then we're going to look at why the benediction for hearing the story of Dhruva Maharaj is one gets profit, adoration, and distinction. What does that mean? So what are profit, adoration, distinction? Well, profit, I have something and I get more. And profit often means that I get more than I need. Or it often also means I get something at your expense. Right? Adoration means people are worshiping me. They're thinking that I'm somebody great. They're giving me some praise, as we're saying. Praise and appreciation are not the same at all. Praise is usually done to flatter somebody, to get something from them. It increases their pride. And distinction, that I want to be... Well, what does the word distinct mean?
Separate.
So I want to be separate. I want to say I am special. I am different from everybody else. I have. There's something about me that's really special. So I'd like to first of all ask, why does Prabhupada say that profit, adoration, and distinction are subtle forms of lust? Yes.
Because lust in the subtle form means I am the selfish. Basically enjoying separately from Krishna. Okay. And all these three forms actually means that I am trying to be the enjoyer. I want to be separate and special from others.
Okay.
I want to be recognized and noticed by others. and I want to be profitable. Like whatever transaction I'm doing, I'm seeing my own benefit.
My own benefit. Okay.
So,
and that's if we think about sex, material sex life. Also, a person is thinking of their own benefit. They're thinking, generally speaking, material sex life means I see the other party as like a glass of water. Right? I'm thirsty, I want to drink water. So I see the member of the opposite sex as somebody who will satisfy my desires. And we see this often. People are talking about getting married, and they say, I want to marry someone who's going to do this and this and this and this and this and this and this, and this for me. I very, very rarely, I practically never have I heard someone say, I want to marry this person because I want to serve them. That's extremely unusual. You know, people more often say, yes, I want someone who's going to be, I want a girl who's very beautiful and a very good cook, and she's going to be very submissive, and she's going to be very intelligent. She's going to be, and the woman is saying, oh, I want a man who's going to make a lot of money, and he's going to take care of me, and he's going to just, you know, he's going to be very kind. We're thinking about what are the qualities that will please me, right? And we are willing to please the other party because by pleasing the other party, they're going to give us something. So the man is buying his lady friend diamond jewelry because he figures if he gives her jewels, then she'll satisfy his senses. And the woman also, she's cooking nice meals and she's doing things because she thinks then the man will satisfy my senses. So that is lust. So profit is also this thing. I'm having a transaction with you, and I want to make sure that I get more than you get. Right? I'm giving you something worth 20 euros, and I am getting from you 22 euros. I am getting some profit. So in our relationships of lust, it's exactly like that. We try to have it equal, but not exactly equal. We want just a little bit more on our side. Right? So these are the subtle forms of material sex desire. Oh, and actually it's Krishna who gets this. Krishna should get all of the profit. Krishna should get all of the worship. Krishna is the one who's actually distinct. Eko bahunam nitya nityanam chaitanas chaitanam eko bahunam yo vidadati kaman eko bahunam, one among the many. And there is no other like God. He's categorically different from all other living entities. Of course, he's also one with all living entities, but he's at the same time categorically different. So if these things are to be given up in order to come to transcendental life, then why are they benedictions that are achieved by hearing the story of Dhruva Maharaj? Well, there's two answers again to this. And we might also look at the fact that it says that these are things that are desired by thoughtful and great persons. That's sort of, I don't really have time to get into that today, but that's something that we could explore in depth. Why is Bhagavatam saying that profit, adoration, and distinction are desired by great persons? And we could also talk a little bit about Varnashram and how the different kinds of people in Varnashram desire different things. I'll just say that briefly. It's really a side point. So the Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, the Brahmanas, their idea of profit, what motivates a Brahmana, is the idea of liberation and truth. A Brahmana will give up honor, profit, and sense gratification for the sake of truth. A Kshatriya is very interested in? Not really, that's the Vaishya.
In protecting the overall propagation of knowledge and saving, basically making progress through serving the Brahmanas.
Becoming powerful?
Yes, yes, both ways. Serving the Brahmanas and becoming powerful. And the Kshatriya wants, actually everybody wants power. The Brahmanas want power through liberation and truth. That's their power. Through renunciation, liberation, and truth, yes.
Kshatriya wants victory.
I think everybody wants power and victory. I mean, everybody, but it's the way that they want to get it that's different. So the Brahmana wants power and victory through truth. The Kshatriya wants power and victory through righteousness. And righteousness and truth are not exactly the same thing. They're somewhat different. Material dharma and absolute truth are very close, but they're not exactly the same thing. The kshatriya is interested in dharma for the sake of dharma, and dharma for the sake of being known as a righteous person. They want to be, I'm a righteous person. And the kshatriya will sacrifice wealth and sense gratification for the sake of dharma. We find many instances of kshatriyas who gave away all of their wealth for the sake of dharma, but they'll also sacrifice truth for the sake of dharma. They'll sacrifice truth for their reputation. The Vaishyas want victory and power through opulence and wealth. And the Vaishyas, who are a mixture of passion and ignorance, they're also interested in dharma, but you know, they're willing to fudge on righteousness in order to get wealth. So if a Vaishya has to cheat, the real kshatriya will never cheat. He wants to be known as a very honest and righteous person. But the Vaishya will cheat. The Vaishya will engage in underhanded activities in order to get wealth. And the Vaishya will, a real Vaishya will sacrifice even sense enjoyment for the sake of wealth. You find that Vaishyas, even after they've earned a lot of money, they'll keep working because they want to increase their wealth. And they'll certainly sacrifice truth and liberation for the sake of wealth. And both the Vaishyas and the Sadhus, actually all of them, have some interest in reputation. But what they want, their power, their reputation, their victory, is based on something different. Then the Shudras, what is their interest? Sense gratification. Immediate pleasure. And Shudras will certainly sacrifice their wealth for immediate pleasure. We saw this when we were distributing books at the airport. You know, and people get their paycheck on Friday. On Friday they have a lot of money, and on Monday it's all gone. They don't save their wealth. They're not interested in wealth. They're interested in immediate pleasure. And certainly a Shudra will sacrifice righteousness. They don't care if they're righteous or not. And they certainly don't care about liberation and truthfulness. So everybody wants reputation, profit, adoration, distinction, but in different ways. In different ways. The Shudra doesn't mind being famous for being degraded. They don't mind being very famous as a degraded person, being well known. And the Vaishya is happy to be famous for his wealth, even if he got it through underhanded means. But here it's saying that great persons want tejaha, want prowess, and want reputation. This is speaking about at least the kshatriyas and the brahmanas. Those who want power and reputation in association with righteousness, in association with dharma. And that's much greater than someone who wants reputation just for being a cricket player, you know, or a rock and roll star. So it's saying even that kind of material benediction is available for those who hear this pastime. But I've been talking about the fact that all desires ultimately come from the spiritual. What happens if we try to just crush desires? Have you ever tried to take a material desire and just destroy it and fight it? What happens to that desire? You fall back in it. The desire gets what?
Bigger.
It gets bigger. And this is a very simple psychology. Like if I say to you, okay, you can think about anything you want except elephants. Right? It doesn't work. And we've seen this with renunciates. One person was just telling me how one of our former sannyasis was giving all these classes, women are terrible, women are terrible, women are terrible, women are terrible. And then, of course, after a few days, he's with one of these terrible women. So this is... that doesn't work. You can't take material desires and smash them and fight them and conquer them. Although sometimes that language is used. That doesn't work. First of all, then, whatever you meditate on is what you become. Yam yam va bismam bhavam. Whatever you think about is what you become. So if you think about the negative, you'll become the negative. And the other reason is that all of the desires have their ultimate reality. If you're trying to smash the desires, you're trying to smash something that's real. And it doesn't work. So what we want to do instead is purify our desires. The essence of a personalistic philosophy is that we are trying to transform our desires back to the spiritual. We are trying to turn the lust back into love. We are not trying to kill lust. You cannot kill it. You can't kill it. And an example that I was giving recently, because I was just a couple months or so ago, I was visiting my oldest son, and he has a two-year-old boy. And while I was there, the two-year-old boy had a cold. Like right now, I have a cold. But of course, as an adult with a cold, I bring some tissues for blowing my nose. And because he was only two, when his nose was running, he was just wiping it on his arms. And then after wiping it on his arms, he's smearing it all over his face. And then he was also smearing it all over his belly, and he was a mess. So my son and daughter-in-law did not reject their child. They did not try to kill their child or reject him or disown him because he was covered with mucus. They didn't say, "Ew, you're not my child." What did they do? They washed him up, right? Of course, then he did it again. But with our material desires, we often try to disown them. We say, "Oh, it's not mine. I don't really have that material desire." Nonsense. Of course we have it. Of course it's ours. We've chosen it. The solution instead is to give it a bath. To give it a bath, a shower. Clean it up. Make it what it was originally. So let's look at profit, adoration, and distinction. So what about profit? What is the spiritual side of desiring profit?
We can probably look at the benefits that we can get by our sadhana.
Okay, but even that is not pure. The benefits from our sadhana is not pure. That's sattva-gun, but it's not pure.
Probably we can...
For a beginner, that's probably a good idea. So for a beginner, we find many things in the shastras saying you will get this and this material or spiritual benefits from your sadhana. And for a beginner, that's probably a good meditation. But at a certain point, we see that becomes a hindrance. And actually, I should make this point as well, that something that helps you at one stage may be a hindrance in another. A very simple example of this is when you're teaching 5, 6, 7-year-old children, you teach them that you cannot subtract a larger number from a smaller number. You cannot do 3 minus 5. You just can't do it. But of course, can you subtract 5 from 3?
Yes,
people do it all the time. What is it called?
Negative.
What is it? It's debt.
Negative.
It's negative. People regularly go into debt and do 3 minus 5. So of course you can do it. But for the 6-year-old child, if we teach them that, it's a hindrance. If we teach the 6-year-old child about negative numbers, it will impede their learning. But at a certain point, not teaching it will also impede their learning. So in the very beginning, one is going to be induced, and we've been talking about this, by the idea that if I take up a spiritual practice, I may get riches, I may get long life, I may get profit, I may get distinction. And gradually one will start thinking, if I take up spiritual life, then I'll get all kinds of spiritual benefits. I'll become spiritually joyful, I'll see Krishna, I won't feel the material miseries anymore. And those are important inducements for the beginner. But at a certain point, those become hindrances. Yes?
Actually, Prabhupada used to say that if one wants to develop certain quality, then one, even if he doesn't have, if he tries to do that, he will get that quality. So a simple example can be possibly one is not having a service attitude, but if he forces himself to serve others, then he sees, he has a motive behind it, that
yes,
he develops that service quality, which is a good profit to, you know, seek. because that's a quality that is recommended for one.
Okay.
Humility is another example.
All right, so we can have as profits the good qualities. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which is also said here, that anyone who hears this narration acquires exalted qualities like him. And why do we want these good qualities? To please Krishna. Just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, one meaning of the Maha Mantra is, "Lord, make me fit to serve you. Make me fit to serve you." So just like if you want to have any kind of job, you have to become fit for that job. I mean, perhaps there are some jobs, unskilled labor, that require almost no fitness, but I think even them require some physical strength, some kind of fitness. You have to have some ability to do almost any kind of job. You have to become qualified. Prabhupada was asked why Krishna tests us. And he said that if you want a high position, there has to be an exam. If you just want to be a bum in the street, there's no exam for being a bum in the street. But if you want to be a government official, then there's going to be some exam. So we should want to become qualified. One way that I think about this is just like the food we offer to Krishna should all be pure vegetarian food. So if I'm purchasing something in the shop, then I'm going to look at the ingredients, right? I want to make sure this is a suitable offering for Krishna. So the main thing what is the main thing I'm offering to Krishna? Myself. I'm offering myself to Krishna. So I should be checking my list of ingredients and see if I'm actually worthy of being offered to Krishna. So I should be desiring this prophet. I should want the prophet of humility. I should want the prophet of being appreciative of others, as in the third verse of the Shikshastika. All of the 26 qualities of the devotees, I should be wanting that prophet. That's my list of ingredients. Right? The qualities of a devotee. I'm thinking of another kind of prophet that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said he wanted. He said, Prema dana bina vyarta daridra jivana dasa kori betan mori deha prema dana. So betan, you know any Bengali?
Yeah, it's a salary.
Salary. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was saying betan. My Bengali pronunciation is not very good. I'm sorry, but he says, I want betan. I want a salary. He wants a salary. He says, I want a salary. He says, prema dana. Dana means?
Money.
Prema dana. Prema means love. Prema dana. I want the money of love. Prema dana bina, without. Prema dana bina vyarta. Arta also means? Vyarta means useless. Arta means?
Gain
or wealth also. So vyarta, without wealth. Daridra. Daridra means? Like Daridra Narayan. No,
Daridra.
Daridra, sorry.
Poor.
Sorry, I speak Bengali like a orangutan. So Daridra Jivana. Jivana is life. So prema dana bina. Prema dana bina would mean?
Without
somebody else besides our Indians.
Okay.
Prema dana bina means? Who is listening? Or you just let them answer all the questions and you were sleeping. What does prema dana mean?
The money of love.
The money of love. Bina means? Without. Vyarta means? Arta means wealth. Vyarta means? Useless. Without wealth. Without profit. Daridra means? Poor. Jivana means?
Life.
So what does prema dana bina vyarta daridra jivana mean?
Love money without useless wealth.
Okay. Without the money of love, life is what? Useless and?
Poor.
Can we see if we can remember this? Prema dana bina vyarta daridra jivana. Can you see if you can repeat that? Prema dana bina vyarta daridra jivana. Without the wealth of love, prema, without the money, the wealth of love, prema dana bina, without having the money of love, vyarta, there's no profit, there's no wealth. It's useless. There's no gain. Daridra, it's poor life. You have a useless, poor, unsuccessful failure of a life. Dasa kori. Dasa means what?
Servant.
Dasa kori betan mori. Betan means?
Salary.
I want to be your servant and I want a salary. Now this is very revolutionary because we say devotees shouldn't work for salaries. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was saying, I want a salary. What do you think the salary he wants is?
Salary of faith.
Faith? What did he start in the beginning saying? What is the money?
Prema.
He wants this salary. Deha, deha means give. Prema dana. Dasa kori, I want to be your servant. Betan mori, you give me, mori means me, you give me betan. Dasa Kori, I want to be your servant. Beitan More, you give me a salary. Deha, prema, dana. Let's see if you can repeat this. Dasa Kori, Beitan More, deha, prema, dana. So this is the profit we want. We want profit. We want a salary. We want the salary of love. So instead of material profit, which is lust, material profit is I want a little more than you. We are going to have an exchange, and I am going to get a little more. Not too much more, because if I take too much more, you won't keep doing business with me. And I want to keep getting, right? You don't want to cut off the head of the goose that lays the golden egg. So I don't want to take too much profit. But I want enough profit so that I'm getting a little more. That's lust. And the spiritual profit that we want is love. Where I'm giving everything. I give everything. And guess what Krishna gives back? Everything. Krishna gives himself. Now think, myself, what can I give compared to Krishna's self, what he can give? Who's going to get more? I'm going to get more. But I don't have that mentality. My mentality is I'm giving everything. And my satisfaction is in the giving. And Krishna says, you've given everything to me, I'll give everything to you. But the everything I have to give and the everything he has to give are not equal. That is real profit. But I'm not doing it for that profit. I'm saying, Lord, don't give me anything. The giving itself is what is my profit. That is what's satisfying. All right, adoration. What is the spiritual side of adoration?
If we are able to please our guru,
mm-hmm.
Yes. By our service.
Yes.
They appreciate that.
So I was quoting this, but I thought I would read it just in case any of you had any doubts that maybe I was just making something up. So here it's describing how Akura goes to Vrindavan and how he's thinking about how Krishna is going to reciprocate with him. He said, I shall stand before him with all humility and folded hands. Surely he will be pleased with my devotional attitude, and maybe he will smile lovingly and look upon me and thereby free me from all sinful reaction. I shall then be on the platform of transcendental bliss and knowledge. Since Krishna knows my heart, certainly when I approach him, he will embrace me. I am not only one of the members of the Yadu dynasty, but I am an unalloyed pure devotee. By his merciful embrace, my body, my heart, and soul will be completely cleansed of the actions and reactions of our past life. When our bodies touch, I will immediately stand up with folded hands, with all humility. Certainly Krishna and Balaram will call me Akura, uncle. That's a kind of adoration, isn't it? Isn't it? Krishna will call me Akura, uncle. And at that time, my whole life will be glorious. Unless one is recognized by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his life cannot be successful. It is clearly stated here, this is not Prabhupada talking, that one should try to be recognized. One should try to be recognized by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by one's service and devotion, without which the human form of life is condemned. So this is the kind of adoration that we should want. The queens of Dwarka, they say, whenever Krishna looks at us with love and affection, we feel that our whole life is successful. And Krishna is sitting in a circle surrounded by the cowherd boys. He's looking at each one of them with adoration. With adoration. And each cowherd boy thinks, Krishna is only facing me. Krishna is only looking at me. So that is the kind of adoration that we want. Now what about distinction? Distinction means to be?
Separate.
Distinct. What kind of, now, distinction in this world generally means I want to be separate and distinct, but above others. Right, which is very close to adoration. I want to be above others, and I want everybody else to recognize it. So profit means I want to get a little more than you in our exchange. Distinction means I want to be different from you. And adoration means I want you to notice that I'm different from you. I want you to say, yes.
I think
you're better than me. So in all these cases, it's looking for something unequal. Whereas the adoration that the devotee wants from Krishna, the recognition the devotee wants from Krishna, is not on this platform. The devotee is not trying to be better than Krishna. It's just a reciprocation of love. So what about this distinction? What is the spiritual side of wanting distinction? That's the material side. What is the original spiritual desire?
Basically, actually our original Swarupa itself is distinct. You know, we have a personal relationship with Krishna.
Yes.
So if we are able to invest with that purpose, that we want to establish our individual relationship.
Yes, exactly. Just like it's explained when Krishna expanded himself as all the boys and calves. Do you all know that story? Do you know that story? So Lord Brahma stole all of Krishna's friends, all of his boyfriends and all of his calves, and put them in a cave. And then Krishna became copies of all of the boys and the calves. And he became perfect copies, completely perfect copies. And when Brahma came back and saw that there were two sets, he became astonished. Why? Why was Lord Brahma astonished that there were two completely identical sets of boys and calves?
Because it is not possible that there can be in the creation two people absolutely identical.
Brilliant. I have asked this question of many people, and usually it takes at least 10 minutes for someone to come up with an answer. So yes, it is not possible in creation for there to be two souls alike. Actually, it wasn't two souls. One was God and one was the soul. And then Krishna showed, no, these are all expansions of me. They're all expansions of God. They're not individual souls. That means there's nobody else exactly like me. Just think about that. Nobody. There has never been anybody exactly like me. There will never be anybody exactly like me. Ever. I am distinct. I am unique. I am special. And I have a distinct, special relationship with Krishna. You know, we talk about the five main relationships that one has with Krishna. But even within those relationships, there's much variety. And Rupa Goswami particularly, and I think also Jiva Goswami, writes about some of the variations. Just like among the cowherd girls, we talk about there's left-wing gopis and right-wing gopis. Some of them have this nature, some of them have that nature. Those are general categories. But just like in this world, there's all these tests of personality analysis. You've ever heard of those sort of tests? What kind of personality are you? Are you an extrovert? Are you an introvert? Are you a task person? Are you a people person? Right? And we can talk about these broad categories. And each of us fits into one of these broad categories. But as you start coming down to me as a person, you get something that is unique. And Krishna seems to be really interested in uniqueness. Because even on the material platform, no one else has my thumbprint. Even among identical twins, the thumbprints are slightly different. No one has my DNA, and that's just the body. That's not even me, the soul. And there never was anyone in history with exactly my DNA, and there'll never be anybody. And each body I take is unique. Each snowflake is unique. No one has found two snowflakes the same. And we can understand that God is somebody who's very, very interested in individuality and variety. He really likes individuality and variety. And why do we want to revive our actual distinct nature? Right now in this body, I'm not manifesting my true distinct nature. This is a costume, and it's a persona that I've taken on in this life due to my material desires, like one takes on the role of an actor in a play. Not only is this body not me, but the personality I am exhibiting in this life is also not me. And in other lifetimes, I've exhibited all other aspects of personality. Some lifetimes were leaders, some were followers. Some were very cautious, some were very courageous. So why do I want to awaken who I really am? Now Krishna is, he's able to satisfy his own desires, just like Krishna was able to make forms of himself that were the same as the cowherd was. So Krishna is able to satisfy the desires of my particular relationship with him without me. But he'd much rather satisfy it with me. That's why I exist. I exist for a particular reciprocal relationship with Krishna that only I have. We were talking yesterday about being grateful to God for all the varieties of food and how amazing it is that no two vegetables, no two fruits have exactly the same flavor and texture. There's some different. So each of us also, sometimes rasa is compared to flavor. Each of us have a particular rasa, a particular flavor of a relationship with Krishna that only we have. And nobody else has it. And now while we are in a sleeping condition, while our actual spiritual personality is not awakened, Krishna is not experiencing the flavor of that relationship with us. Again, he can experience that flavor from his own self. He doesn't need us, but he wants us. Now why? Because he knows that unless we are having this relationship, we cannot be happy. Now he wants this for our happiness. His happiness is not dependent on that, but our happiness is dependent. Therefore, what really pleases Krishna is if we can awaken our very, very, very individual relationship and our very individual nature with Krishna. That is what will make him supremely happy. And we see some reflection of this in an ordinary family. You know, I have three children, and I have a different relationship with each one of them. And I like that. I like the fact that I have a different relationship with each one of them. I have many friends, and with each of them I have a somewhat different relationship. And I like that. I wouldn't want to have exactly the same relationship with everybody that I know. I like the fact, I like variety of relationships. That's very pleasing. So Krishna also has this, but Krishna has it to an unlimited degree. So therefore there's unlimited souls that each have a unique relationship with Krishna. And he, therefore, has a unique relationship with us. So the way that we conquer material lust is to awaken spiritual love. Please do not try to conquer material desires by killing them, attacking them, denying them, hating them. Just give them a bath. If you focus on the spiritual form, the original spiritual form of desires, the material form will automatically go. Because the material form is so unattractive compared to the spiritual form. You know, I love my grandson, but I really don't want to hug him when he's covered with mucus. So our spiritual desires are wonderful, but when they're covered with lust, and when they're covered with the material atmosphere, they become repulsive. So I'm not going to say the, we'll say a. A spiritual form of profit is wanting the salary of?
Love.
In a minute. A spiritual form of adoration is wanting the recognition of?
Service.
Of service, of Krishna. That Krishna's only looking at me. We see this throughout Krishna's pastimes. Each gopi thinks Krishna's only sitting with me. Each queen thinks Krishna's only in my palace. Each cowherd boy thinks Krishna's only... That Krishna is adoring you. You are adoring Krishna. Krishna is adoring you. And the ultimate spiritual form of distinction that we want is? A personal relationship with Krishna. So reading this story of Dhruva Maharaj can certainly get us the lust form of profit, adoration, and distinction, if that is what we want. But it can also get us the pure form, if that is what we want. And our process, again, is to purify our desires and come to their original form. As we meditate on Dhruva Maharaj, we see how he did this. He started off wanting something impure, and at the end, he came to want the actual pure. So, thank you very much. And yes, sir, how many is it?
This demand of Chaitanya to get this salary of
the money of love.
Money of love. Is this very natural, or is this that you demand love? But can or should this also be given up?
Not a demand, a request. Not a demand. Demand means that I'm in the superior position. So not a demand. It's a request. It's a request means that if the other party says no, Krishna can say no. But of course the devotee doesn't stop requesting. And the devotee thinks, let me become fit to make the request. Let me get the ingredients of the 26 qualities so that I can make this request for love. Because Krishna may say, well, wait a minute. Yes, I'd like to exchange love with you, but you're all covered with mud. Go take a bath. And then you can request. Then you can make this request. But no, not a demand. In fact, one of the big differences between the person who's approaching the Lord for material desires and the person who's approaching out of pure love is whether you're making demands.
Sorry.
No problem. In fact, this word demand really, it's part of the mood of exploitation in this world. That in my relationships with others, I want to demand, you must love me, you must do this for me. You must do this. You should. You must. You have to. The very word demand implies that I have a right to something, and it implies that I can force another living being to do something against their will, which is the essence of lust also. So lust is I want to get a little more than you, and lust is also that I am willing to do so by force. I don't really care whether or not you voluntarily want to give. Voluntarily want to give is love. Like Prabhupada said, what is the difference between love and rape? You know, rape is a demand. You must, or I'll cut your throat. So that's the whole exploitive material mentality is that of demand. Whenever we're dealing with another person and we say things like, you should, you must, of course, we have some responsibility. If you're a parent, then you have to teach your children this is the proper way to behave. But for their sake, not for your sake. That's a little different. Even then, actually, you can't demand. Even the little child has free will. You can't force. This desire to force is, you could say it's sort of at the root of our materialistic mentality. We're not respecting that someone else is a free-willed living being. I mean, Krishna can say, you should surrender. But even Krishna, who says you should surrender, he also says to Arjuna, you can do whatever you like. Mm-hmm. He doesn't force. Yes?
Yeah, I want to ask from our side, that when we are saying, now, okay, I will offer everything, I will lose all anarthas to the material sensification, and I will do greater passion for Krishna, that I touch Krishna, so that Krishna see me and Krishna give me his love and his mercy. But isn't it that this also like a desire where we say,
yes,
I
will
Krishna's
love,
I will Krishna's relationship.
Yes, yes. That's why I was saying that what is good at a lower platform is not good at a higher platform. So thinking like that at a lower platform is very good. At a higher platform, you still say those things, but your motive is different.
So the motive of self, you have to be, it means that...
Just think for a minute. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's not materialistic, right? You agree or no?
Yeah.
So why is he asking this?
For the sake of...
Hmm?
For the sake of the people.
No.
To,
yeah, go ahead. Try.
To, that is the supreme most thing to get, actually, love of Krishna.
But why is it not selfish? He's saying that asking for love can also be selfish.
Because Krishna wants to give us the
yes. That's what Krishna wants more than anything else. That's what will make him happy. He's not interested in diamonds. He has them. They're already his. In fact, you could say he is them. He doesn't. Rukmini said he doesn't need to possess them here. He is them. He doesn't need our body. He already has it. Manasa deha geha. He already has our mind. You could say he already is it. He can take it whenever he wants. That's the proof of it. If he wants to take our body in the next minute, he can. I can't do anything about it. There's something that he doesn't have. Of course, again, he can manifest from his own potency. He doesn't need to get it from me. But there's something he doesn't have from me. What is it that he doesn't have from me? He doesn't have my love. He doesn't have the voluntary giving of my will. And he would like that. Now, why does Krishna want it? So I want to give it to Krishna because he wants it. Just imagine if you have someone you love and you know they have a favorite food. Wouldn't you want to give it to them? Guess what one of Krishna's favorite foods is that he doesn't have right now? You. He's not able to taste the flavor of your love. He can taste it from his own potency. He doesn't need you in order to taste it. But he wants to taste it from you. Why? So you want to give it to him because you love him and you want him to taste it. But why does he want to taste your love? What's his motive? Again, he can taste it from his own potency. He doesn't need to taste it from you. He's not really lacking it exactly. So why does he want to taste your particular flavor of love?
Because it satisfies us also.
Yes, because it will make you happy. So his motive is 100% selfless. 100% selfless. He has nothing to gain by tasting your particular flavor of love because he can do it himself, as he showed with the expanding as the cowherd boys. He can expand into someone who's an exact copy of you, but it's not a jiva, it's himself. He doesn't need you, but he wants you. Why? For you. And you want to give it for him. That's love. Now, can the beginner think like this? No, not possible. That's okay. The beginner is just thinking, oh, I don't want to have a headache anymore. Or I want great joy. Or I want to understand things. That's okay. That's all right. Don't pretend that you're an advanced devotee when you're a beginner. It's okay to be a beginner when you're a beginner. It's all right. If you're just learning how to play the violin, you're just doing do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, no, ti, la, so, fa, mi, de. That's okay. In fact, without honesty, you can't progress. If I want to know how to get from here to Cologne, I have to say where I'm starting from. If I call up the temple in Cologne, how do I get there? They'll say, where are you? If I lie and I say I'm in Berlin, then they'll give me the wrong directions. So beginning devotees often imagine that they're much more advanced than they are, or they try to imitate being more advanced than they are, and that means that they can't progress because they're following the instructions for somebody else. So, in the beginning, we have material motives. Frankly, in the beginning, we have 99% material motives and 1% pure motives, honestly. It's only at the stage of Nista, it's like 40% pure motives, 60% material motives, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And that's at the stage of liberation. But I can have some regret. Krishna, I'm coming to you with impure motives. I regret that. I hope someday I can come to you with pure motives. My goal is pure motives. And because my goal is pure motives, therefore I'm accepted as a beginning pure devotee. And not as a materialistic devotee. Whereas the materialistic devotee, they don't even aim to have pure motives. Anything else? Did you
so
have another
this,
question?
So
yes?
This request of getting back love seems to be more or superior to have a behavior like I don't need anything, I want to give everything, but I don't need everything. Just try to imagine a child who is so independent. She says, I love you so much, Mama, but I don't need your love. But if she would say, oh, I have to request, the mother must be very happy if the child wants this only one.
That is the most beautiful thing I've ever heard.
The most beautiful
Thank
thing
you very much.
Want.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Yes, Prabhu, did you have something?
Oh, I would like to ask you, I don't know if you already answered this or elaborated on this point that Lord Chaitanya's favorite story is one of his favorite stories was his Dhruva Maharaj.
Yes, I talked about that the other day. Yeah, yeah. The story of Dhruva Maharaj is, I think I started to say this and I never finished making the point. I was talking once with a friend of mine about how that if we, maybe I talked about it a little bit, how if we were to make movies of Krishna's pastimes, Ramchandra's pastimes, we could really spread Krishna consciousness. My friend said it might be better to have movies showing a person who becomes a devotee. And I thought the story of Dhruva is one of the nicest stories like that. The journey of a soul from being a materialist to being a pure devotee. What is the process that he goes through? Yeah, so it's one of the most exciting stories. You know, I'm one of the editors for our Back to Godhead magazine, and one of the most popular articles are always how I became a devotee. We call them HIC articles, how I came. I recently we were reviewing one of them, and there's a new editor in the group, and he said, this story doesn't have anything special about it. I said, doesn't matter. Any story about how I came, is if it's well written and it's an interesting story, everybody loves to read it. One of the main questions that I think all of us get asked is, how did you become a devotee? How did you take up Krishna consciousness? So that's Dhruva's story, how I became a devotee. And it's not only do we like to read such stories, but even Krishna likes to read such stories. How did the lost soul come home? Right? Don't we love to read stories like that? Someone who's, they call them redemption stories. Many books, movies, they're about redemption. Somebody who's bad character, bad qualities, bad habits, and they become transformed. One of the most exciting stories. So I'd like to end now. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah.